This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Elliot Jackson, Network Desk Writer for Reach PLC. And alongside me, as always, are freelance football writers George Smith and Tom Coates. How are we doing, lads?
I'm not bad, Elliot. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, mate. George? No, George, not George. Tom, how are things?
Yeah, they're good, thanks, pal. How are they with you?
Yeah, good, thanks. So good that I managed to duplicate George into two different people. That's a scary world.
Nobody wants that.
No, very pleased to have Tom and not two Georges to review this weekend's championship action. Quick reminder that you can find the pod on Twitter and Instagram at ChampChatPod, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast through your preferred provider to get the latest episode for free every single week. In today's pod, we'll be reviewing Cardiff City's decision to sack Neil Harris, with Mick McCarthy the man tasked with lifting the Bluebirds up the table. We'll also be reviewing the four championship matches that did take place this weekend, with big wins for Derby County, Watford and Blackburn Rovers.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
We'll begin our weekend analysis at the Cardiff City Stadium, where the Bluebirds managed to grab all the headlines without being in action as they sacked Neil Harris over the midweek period and replaced him with Mick McCarthy. So we'll start with the decision to relieve Neil Harris of his duties, because it wasn't for another 48 hours or so that they appointed a new man. We had this discussion probably 6 weeks ago, George, and you said that although Cardiff were underperforming by not being closer in the playoff race, the fact that Neil Harris's job was being talked about as under threat, you said it was ridiculous. Since then, they went on a four-game winning run and then lost, and then have lost six in a row in all competitions. The 15th in the league. I think there's something like 13 points off the playoffs. Having tipped them to be second at the start of the season, how surprised are you by this decision? Is it the right decision? And do you think it's fair?
Well, for starters, I'm going to prove my shocking memory and forget that I actually even said that. You know, it's quite embarrassing now looking back, isn't it? Saying that I thought they'd get automatic promotion. I'd actually forgot all about
that. You put them second.
I know I did. That seems a long time ago. But no, I think I was saying about Neil Harris's future at the time, where Cardiff, they were having a little bit of a rough patch, and then obviously they got a four-game winning run going. They kept three clean sheets in that time, and you thought, yeah, they just had a situation which most championship clubs have, where they experience a bit of a bumpy patch, and they look like they come through it. But obviously, to have lost six games in a row in League and Cup is a really worrying trend. It was seven defeats in eight in all. And you just feel for a side that had obviously got so close last season in terms of the playoff place and got into the semi-finals of the playoffs, that they should have been performing better for the players that they got. They brought some decent additions in over the summer. Kiefer Moore, an experienced championship striker. Harry Wilson, who realistically, looking back in the summer, when if you were putting a piece together last summer and ranking those championship summer signings, you probably would have thought Harry Wilson was one of the best additions that anybody could have made. But unfortunately, we've not seen the very best of him. But for whatever reason, Neil Harris has just—he's just seemingly lost his way. And at the end of the day, it's cost him his job. But whether it's the right decision or not, time will tell. But based on the fact that they've been on such a poor run of form, I think it was inevitable that it was bound to happen, particularly after back-to-back home defeats his last two games, and especially to QPR. So time will tell, but Neil Harris, I think eventually the decision was the correct one.
Yeah, I've been wrangling with this decision as well, and what I think, and whether I think it's fair. And I would first of all say that I think Cardiff City came into the season with raised expectations. I would say that the squad is not of the quality of a top six team, in my opinion, although there was money spent on Kiefer Moore and a hefty loan fee for Harry Wilson, as George quite rightly points out. What I would caveat is, I don't think it's a top six squad. I do think it's a squad that should be closer to challenging for the playoffs, and it should be, you know, to be 15th in the table and so many points away from the top six. I think it's fair to say they are underperforming. They have underperformed, but I do wonder if Cardiff hadn't gone on such a strong run at the end of last season and got into the playoffs, whether the tolerance levels for Neil Harris's underperformance, if that's how we're going to dub it, would have been higher, whether he would have got more time. They've been a little bit unlucky with injuries too. Kiefer Moore's been out for the best part of a month now, and not having your top striker is a big problem. And I think we've seen the drop-off between Moore and Glatzel is quite extreme for the way that this Cardiff City side wants to play. So I do think in some ways the expectations levels may have been a little bit too high, but by the same token, to be as far off as they are is an underachievement. There's no doubt about that for me. Tom, where do you stand with the decision? Have they gone too early, do you think? Did he deserve a couple more games, or six games in a row, I suppose, in League and Cup, to lose those, especially after having a bad run before the four-game winning run? Complete lack of consistency in results, really.
Yeah, I don't think it was too soon, to be honest. I think we're far enough into the season for the decision to be justified now. And Cardiff, I think the most concerning aspect of Cardiff's last few weeks is, even after the defeats, and obviously I understand that Neil Harris will have been trying to rectify the problems that he saw on the pitch, I didn't see any real improvement or change week in, week out. And obviously, if a team's struggling, you expect from the manager to see some sort of attempt at an improvement and some sort of, you know, like noticeable change in the way they play or how they operate. And I think over the last few weeks, we've just not really seen that from Cardiff. And I think that comes down to a few reasons. One of which I think if you've got a good side, and you know on paper you've got a good side, you often will have belief in that side that they'll turn it around. And that's not always the case. Sometimes you've got to really step in and make changes. But I think Neil Harris sort of hoped that his squad was good enough to turn it around. And I think he didn't put enough of a stamp on proceedings, I don't think. And I do think it was a justified decision. And I mean, I feel that I'm going to end up playing devil's advocate on this episode, because as we will soon come to, I don't think the alternative that they've gone for is as harrowing a decision as some Cardiff fans have made it out to be.
I don't particularly either. We'll come on to that in a minute. But they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And by what you've just said there, I think you've just called Neil Harris insane. So that's
I mean, that's putting words in my mouth. But I mean,
no, that's what I'm going with.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
that's the headline.
The listeners will have more sense than you to understand me in that phrase.
It doesn't take a great deal, does it, saying
that? No, it doesn't.
So we'll move on 36 hours, 48 hours down the line. And Mick McCarthy is the man. Obviously, had a failed spell.
He's the man. Agreed.
He's the man. He's the man. That is taking over at the Cardiff City Stadium until the end of the season. Had a failed spell in Greece. Or was it Cyprus?
Cyprus.
In Cyprus, after a spell out of management after leaving Ireland. Lasted about 2 months there. Interesting for me that reports, and obviously well placed, it's well understood that they did approach Paul Cook, who obviously we know is Sheffield Wednesday fans' most wanted man to take over at Hillsborough, but that's not developing anywhere. Paul Cook turned it down because Cardiff only wanted an appointment till the end of the season. He wanted a longer-term project, which I find is interesting. So clearly we're looking for a certain calibre of manager, because you're never going to attract a massive, massive candidate for a job till the end of the season. I don't really know why Cardiff only wanted a man until the end of the season particularly. I don't know why that was just the sole aim, because clearly it was. That was the remit. I don't really understand why particularly. But Mick McCarthy, obviously he's not been in Championship action since he was sacked by Ipswich Town many years ago now. He had a spell with Ireland where he did okay, nothing wow, not done great at Ipswich, in Cyprus. But let's not forget, he has got a promotion on his CV, he took Wolves up, he did really well there. He's got two promotions on his CV, sorry, yeah, of course, even before Wolves, he took Sunderland up as well. So two promotions on his CV. It's just whether his methods, I don't want to say are outdated, because that seems a little harsh and a little ageist, but that is the question we're asking. And the reaction, it's fair to say, from the Cardiff City fan base has not been a good one, has it, Tom?
No, it hasn't. And I understand why Cardiff fans aren't really jumping with joy at it, but I don't really think it's a disastrous appointment. He's not the name you want for a long-term project where a vision's put in place, but he has got the ability to galvanise a squad. And on paper, as I mentioned, Cardiff do have a really strong squad at Championship level. And Mick McCarthy's a manager who, he can put his arm around players, the underperforming players in particular, and he can lift a dressing room. And I think there's a reason that Mick McCarthy and Terry Connor are so well thought of and have had success in their careers. And I think he got a lot of undue criticism at Ipswich, I feel, which obviously the last time he was in the Championship. I think what happened to Ipswich after his departure.
He overachieved with Ipswich year on year to get them in the playoffs and in and around it. And then he wasn't getting backed or funded, was he, by the owners? Yeah. Didn't have the money. And eventually that is always going to fall off. That is not a sustainable route to success, is it? There was always going to be a drop-off. And I think I would agree with you there that he was ostracised a little bit by the supporters when he was overperforming to start with.
Yeah, I think he was a victim of his own success, obviously. He'd taken a below-average Ipswich squad to a position in the league that was probably beyond them. And I think he got a lot of undue criticism for the way it unfolded at the club. And I think the biggest sort of evidence as to how badly Mick McCarthy was treated at Ipswich is what has happened to that club after. They dropped out of the Championship, haven't returned since, and haven't really looked like returning. And I think
they went for the younger thing, didn't they, with Paul Hurst, and it just blew up badly.
Yeah, I think it vindicates Mick McCarthy in that respect. But
I mean,
don't get me wrong, I know he won't revolutionise Cardiff, but I just can't. Under him, I can't see Cardiff getting dragged close to danger. And that sounds dramatic, but at the moment, as the table stands, they are closer to relegation than they are the playoffs. So that club and that side at this point in the season needs stabilising, and I think Mick McCarthy will do that. Again, I don't think he's going to revolutionise the club. I don't think any fantastic long-term vision is going to get put in place by Mick McCarthy at Cardiff, but they will be far from safety, and they might even start pushing further towards the playoffs under him. And in that respect, On a short-term deal until the end of the season, I don't think it's a particularly bad appointment at all. But that said, I do understand the reaction of the Cardiff fans.
To be fair, nobody coming in at this point in the season could revolutionise Cardiff because they've got nothing to work with. They've got a squad that's been built for two pragmatic managers in Neil Warnock and then Neil Harris. So it is a squad built for a pragmatic approach.
Very true.
We're in the January transfer window, which is impossible to do wide-scale business. Cardiff haven't particularly got the money to do wide-scale business either. So nobody could come in and revolutionise. They could bring Pep Guardiola in. He's not going to be able to revolutionise how that squad's set up. We spoke about Jonathan Woodgate coming in, obviously, at Middlesbrough and him having to work with a squad and not being able to transform it. So there's only so much that could be done between now and the end of the season anyway. So I don't particularly think it's a surprising move or a wrong move to go pragmatic again on a short-term basis. If they then want to advance from that stance in the summer, that is the time to do it, and that may be why they've gone for an appointment till the end of the season. I don't think they'll get dragged into relegation, but I don't think, no matter who the manager is, I don't think the squad's good enough for the top six. I don't. I think it's a squad that's good enough to be competing in the top 10 and certainly be in and around the playoffs, but I'm not wowed by it. I don't think it's a squad good enough for the top six. I never thought it was at the start of the season. I put them about ninth, I think, around that sort of place. And, they are underperforming. That's why Neil Harris has lost his job. But if they finish about there, that's par for the course for me. George, where do you stand on the appointment of Mick McCarthy?
Well, I think I'm with you two, to be fair. It's a decent appointment on a short-term basis. I don't think it's a long-term project that many Cardiff fans would be particularly pleased with. But as you two have said, he did a very good job at Ipswich. He massively overachieved there. He got Wolves into the Premier League. And you look at both of them clubs, he had six-year spells with both of those clubs. So he's got the ability to stabilise things for the long term should things work out well over the next couple of months or so. So Cardiff could have done a heck of a lot worse than going for somebody like Mick McCarthy. I think with the fact that he'd gone out to Cyprus and obviously I think everybody kind of thought maybe that was Mick McCarthy's time done in English football. I think it was a bit of a surprise appointment. It came very, very quickly. So I think there's certainly an element that he was obviously very high up the list from the word go, and he was certainly somebody that the Cardiff board had thought about. But I agree with Tom. I think he's definitely, without a doubt, going to get Cardiff only heading in one direction in terms of going up the table rather than looking over their shoulder. I know we said the same with Tony Pulis at Sheffield Wednesday, but I think the situation's in a lot more different than it was there. So I think it's a decent appointment for Cardiff on a short-term fix. He's going, like Tom said, his pragmatic approach, he'll make them hard to beat, and they will get wins on the board. But I think for him, obviously, we know his style of play isn't the most pleasing on the eye, but he's improved it. He got results, and that's the be-all and end-all of getting somewhere going in this league and things like that. So I think it's a decent appointment on a short-term fix, and I think Cardiff can think now, we can look forward, we can try and build on what we've got and try and get things moving in the right direction over the coming weeks and months. But I'm sure he'll be looking to maybe get one or two bodies through the door before the window shuts a week tomorrow. But end of the day, he's got a squad there that is capable of doing a lot better than what it has in the last few weeks.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of outgoings as well with Cardiff, because we've seen the likes of Josh Murphy, for example, who was on the fringes at under Neil Harrison. Seems like there was a lot of players in that squad that weren't really being utilised by him, and what this obviously could mean with a clean slate for those players. And for me, I just wonder, where do you two stand? What do you think is the realistic ambition for Cardiff for the rest of this season? Am I being harsh by saying I don't think it's any more than a top 10 squad? Or do you think if they keep everyone fit that realistically it is a squad that should be challenged for the playoffs, Tom?
I think an ambitious target should be getting themselves in the mix, in the chasing pack for the playoffs. I mean, I'm talking about the bracket between 6th and maybe like 11th, 10th. But I think on paper, that is probably where this Cardiff squad is suited to, around mid-table, sort of between anywhere between 8th and 13th, really, would be my estimate for how good that Cardiff squad is. I'm pretty sure, and I really hope I'm not being a hypocrite here, I think in my prediction, I said that they'd be just outside the playoffs. Maybe I think I maybe put them 8th. I thought from the very start of the season that they wouldn't be, certainly not challenging for the automatics, as George said. I just think, obviously, the problem is with Cardiff, they've got a lot of players who are clearly talented, but throughout their career haven't really always fulfilled their potential. And I think in that respect, despite the money that they threw about in the summer, obviously it wasn't mega bucks, but there was still money being thrown about. I think they did take gambles. I mean, I think Shea Ojo and Harry Wilson are two examples of players that have undeniable talent, but so far in their careers haven't quite hit the heights that were expected of them, say, 3-4 years ago. Obviously, both coming through very... Sorry, go on.
Neither of them have found a home, have they? And I think that's
no,
quite
yeah,
exciting. They're both on the cusp of the Liverpool team, but they have been for so long and so many championship loans that they're not going to make the breakthrough there. But they've not really found a home elsewhere.
So in that respect, I think it was a little bit of a gamble in trying to make Cardiff a home for those players. But I think they need a little bit more experience, really, potentially in the squad to break into that next bracket of getting into the playoffs. I think they need a little bit more depth. I think if you saw in their last game at their subs bench, they've got a couple of sort of senior players on the books there, but then it's the rest of the substitutes bench is comprised of quite a few young players. And so I think they could definitely do with a bit of depth. Yeah, and to be fair, I think something Cardiff fans can take encouragement from is their newish approach in the transfer market. Obviously, they've been looking to the lower leagues for recruitment. They've brought in Perry and G from Crewe. They've brought in Max Waters. And obviously, these are players, they're clearly looking to the lower leagues to pick up gems now. And I think having, in the summer, taken the approach of looking at sort of Premier League players that are supposed to requirements in the likes of Harry Wilson and Shea Ojo, I think it's quite refreshing now that looking to get a little bit of a blend of players on the up, players who are a little bit on the down and looking to get themselves back up. So I think that creates quite a nice blend. And I think at the end of the day, Cardiff squad has a lot of potential. I mean, if that squad is nurtured and developed correctly, there is a playoff chase inside in that, a playoff achieve inside in there somewhere. It just needs to be unearthed. And I think, obviously, time will tell whether Mick McCarthy is a man to do that. But I think he's certainly got the potential to, because of how good his man management is. And he's proven that over his career. So, yeah, I mean, I think Cardiff under Mick McCarthy will, first and foremost, and I'm talking in the short term over the next few weeks, it's just a case of looking to stabilise. But obviously, with the size of the club and the players that they've got in the squad, I think it would be far too unambitious for Cardiff not to at least try and get themselves in the chasing pack for the playoffs.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
We've only 4 Championship games going on this weekend. We're going to do a quick fire roundup of all 4 rather than focusing on 2 or 3. We thought that would be the better format for this weekend, with the FA Cup still taking centre stage. So we'll go in chronological order, I think, because none of the games were particularly noteworthy or wow or stand out. But still some important wins and results for the general gist of the Championship table. So we'll start with the Friday night game, which was Stoke City and Watford. This game turned very quickly on a sort of a 5-minute spell, and I think it just shows that Watford, although they're convincing absolutely nobody, you know, it's a very impressive win to go and beat Stoke at Stoke, Tom. And 2 goals inside 5 minutes, one another to take the game away from Stoke. And the goals are just still not coming for Stoke at the minute. But for Watford, they're starting to string results, even if the performances aren't following particularly handsomely as well.
Yeah, it could have been more than two goals as well. I thought, first and foremost, I thought Watford should have had another penalty. I think Norrington Davies, consider himself very lucky, could have easily been another penalty for Watford. But, you know, Watford have gone to Stoke and they've put an awful lot of pressure on them. Obviously, a Stoke back line that is quite unpredictable at the best of times anyway. And they forced a lot of mistakes. And obviously, they know that Joseph Bursic is a young goalkeeper and he's going to be prone to the occasional error. Obviously, he gave away the penalty that was given. And, I mean, I was at Rotherham versus Stoke last Tuesday, and you could see in Bursic that he's a tremendously talented young goalkeeper, but he does have shaky moments, and he had a couple against Rotherham, and he definitely had a few against Watford as well. And obviously, teams know that, and Stoke have had a big crisis of goalkeepers, and they obviously have given put faith in a young goalkeeper, a talented young international goalkeeper, and I don't criticise them at all for that, but he's going to make mistakes, and that's part of the parcel of putting faith in young players. But Watford knew that, and they put an awful lot of pressure on him and the defence and got their rewards. But I thought the biggest takeaway really from a Watford perspective is just how impressive Troy Deeney was. I feel like when I was watching sort of the extended highlights, it looked to me that it was the Troy Deeney of old. It was the Troy Deeney that has confidence flowing through his veins. It's the Troy Deeney that has a manager that believes in him. And I think that's the big difference. I think, obviously, the disciplinary problems that came out towards the end of Ivic's reign sort of summarised what was probably, certainly looking from the outside in, not the greatest relationship. I don't think Ivic was particularly close with any of the players. But obviously, a big character like Troy Deeney, such a talismanic leader, I think as a manager, you've got to have that good relationship with a player like Deeney to ensure that you're getting the best out of him. And Cisco Munoz looks like he's got a lot of faith in him. And I mean, he was just tremendous. He's absolutely unplayable on his day. And his link-up play, his finishing, he has it all. And I think he was very impressive. And ultimately, at the end of the day, he is an excellent, excellent championship striker on his day. And he caused Stoke a lot of problems.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like every time that we talk about Watford, you always seem to praise Deeney. But you're absolutely right. When you've got that many technical players as Watford do, you need a physical presence, a focal point to sort of lead that attack. And, you know, for Cisco Munoz, it's been a good start to his managerial career. I think that's, is that three wins out of three and one defeat in the cup?
Something like that, yeah.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Lost to beat Norwich, beat Huddersfield, beat Stoke, obviously lost to Manchester United away in the cup, which is absolutely nothing. Don't really even count it towards
four wins from the first five he's had in the league.
Four wins from five.
Pretty solid start. Lost at Swansea.
Swansea, of course, lost to Swansea.
A pretty solid start.
It has
no disgrace in that.
It has, George. And what have you made? Obviously, again, this is a Stoke defence that doesn't concede many goals. We know that they're struggling in attack and struggling to replace Tyrese Campbell and find that the right balance between staying defensively solid but also having enough to go and win games ultimately, because they haven't been winning a lot of games recently. They have dropped off in that regard. How impressed were you with Watford's performance, and also how are Stoke going to sort of find a way? Because they've brought in two wingers to sort of solve this problem, but they're not playing with wingers really.
Well, I think, first of all, on the point with Watford, I think, obviously, Cisco Munoz has come in, as we say so often, with a lot of Watford managers as a complete unknown to English football. It's the way that they tend to go, and they've done it again this time around. But, as I say, he's had a very good start. Four wins on the first five in the league, four wins in six in all competitions, and obviously they only lost the game against Manchester United, who we have to appreciate a banging form right now. They lost that one by 1-0, so there's no real disgrace in that going down at Old Trafford. But excuse me, the win at Stoke the other night, it's a case of being able to dig deep. A narrow 2-1 away win, but they've got the quality, Watford, for when they need to. They can turn the style on, because if you've got an attacking line with players such as Troy Deeney, Andre Gray, Malang Sarr, you're going to be able to cause damage to any Championship defence when you're on it and you're at it. So that's exactly what they've proven. Watford are always going to be a team like that, capable of turning the game very, very quickly with the players you've got in an attacking sense. So Cisco Munoz will be very pleased. As for Stoke, it is a little bit of a concern the way they've gone in the last few games. And I think it's been proven with the absence of Tyrese Campbell. He's been a huge loss for them with his flair and his creativity at the top end of the pitch. But as you've mentioned, they don't tend to concede all that many goals, but the goals have really, really dried up in the last few games. It's now six league games without a win. Admittedly, they've only lost two in that time. They've managed four draws, so it's not all doom and gloom. But as Tom saw last week against Rotherham, they have got the ability to score goals, but they also have the tendency to go on a run where they can't put the ball in the net. So I think it is going to be a bit of a concern to Michael O'Neill the way they've dropped off after such a brilliant run between October and November. So there's definitely work for him to do in an attacking sense, but defensively they're not bad at all. They're not a bad side. So if they can just rediscover that scoring touch at the top end of the pitch, maybe they want to bring one or two more in before the window closes next week. I think Stoke will certainly be slim with their shout of making that top six push sustained for the rest of the season.
It definitely feels like Stoke are one of the sides that have fallen away a little bit in the top six push. I would have had them a lot higher on my probability list of breaching the playoffs had it not been for Campbell's injury. It really has rocked them. And obviously, getting draws is important, but to a certain point, you've got to be able to go and win games to get in the playoffs. And I just wonder if Stoke have got enough to manage that to get them in the top six anyway, which is going to be a tough ask anyway. It's going to be competitive. We'll move on to QPR 0, Derby County 1, and a massive win for the Rams. After Wayne Rooney was appointed, obviously, last week, they lost the first game against Rotherham United. But a big win at Loftus Road, and Colin Kazim-Richards with the all-important goal, tapping in from close range. And I want to give a shout-out for Kel Roos in this one, because he pulled off some fine saves, in particular one at the end from an overhead kick from, I think it was Johan Barbe. Sensational save, but there was a couple at 0-0 as well where he did really well. And Kel Roos has been someone that's struggled for form, really. He's dipped in and out of the team. He's never really convinced. But with David Marshall unavailable through illness, and not COVID-related, just illness, he stepped up and he did the business. A couple of really important saves, and they're as good as goals, because if they go 1-0 down, it completely changes the game, Tom.
Yeah, definitely. It was a similar story, really, for QPR. They just didn't finish the chances that they had off. And when you're not at your best, like they weren't, you have to do that. But you're completely right in saying that Kel Roos was excellent. He made some really good saves. I think you've got to be on form as a goalkeeper when you're coming up against a striker like Charlie Austin, because as we've seen, he's such a clinical finisher. And to be honest, looking at some of the chances that he had, I don't even think Charlie Austin can be criticised for some of the chances that fell to him. I thought he was getting his efforts on target. I didn't think he had a bad game. I just thought Roos made some really, really agile stops and deserves a lot of credit.
They were good saves rather than bad finishes, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, to be fair, it's nice to see as well, especially from a relatively young goalkeeper, when obviously Kel Roos has had a lot of criticism. He's never really been seen by Derby fans as their long-term number one, despite being there for quite a while now. But I think the performances like that suggest that there is potentially a place for him in that team one day if he can find some consistency. But to be honest, I thought my main takeaway from the game was praise for Wayne Rooney, really, to be honest, because I thought Derby got a better grip of the game in the second half when Max Bird came into the midfield. And I think, obviously, at that point, it was clear, certainly to most people watching it, that whoever gripped that midfield battle would get the upper hand in the second half. And that's exactly what Derby did when they got the extra man in the midfield, and that man was Max Bird. And it wasn't an excellent individual performance from him. I thought him coming into that midfield just strengthened them a little bit. And I thought in the second half, it allowed them to win the midfield battle, take the game by the scruff of the neck. And obviously they went on to get the winner through Colin Kazim-Richards. So I thought it was good management from Rooney, really. It was nice to see from someone who's obviously in the infancy of their managerial career to make a bold call and make a tactical change at half-time. I think they took George Evans off, who no slight on his performance, but he made a bold decision and it paid off, and that's ultimately how managers make their money.
Yeah, and it certainly puts an interesting slant on the table at the moment, because there's a gap now between Nottingham Forest and Derby County, a 5-point gap between Rotherham in 22nd, albeit Rotherham have got 3 games in hand, and obviously they're in decent form, Rotherham, having obviously beaten Derby last time out. Sheffield Wednesday have got 2 games in hand as well, 6 points adrift. Wickham getting cut now, 10 points for them, 2 games in hand, but a tough ask for them to get out of it already. But trying to give myself a little bit of a pat on the back, and yourself, Tom. No, sorry, George did this actually. Sorry, me and George. We tipped QPR to go down. They're losing games against relegation rivals, and they're only 2 points ahead of Derby. So I think it's fair to say by this point, George, although they've signed Charlie Austin, which is a good signing, they're in a bit of trouble, QPR, aren't they? And I think our suggestion that they would be in trouble now that I say Samuel's also, it looks like he's done at QPR. He's signed a pre-contract agreement to go to Fenerbahce, and I don't think he's going to play a great deal between now and the end of the season. It looks like there might be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, it does seem that way, because they're a very strange side, QPR. They seem very capable of losing games very, very quickly, and then they seem to be more than able of picking up victories when you least expect them. Because you look at the last few games, prior to the defeat to Derby yesterday, they had won the last two in the league. They kept back-to-back clean sheets, back-to-back away wins. So you thought they're turning a corner. But when you look at their overall form, I think it's something like two wins in about eight or nine games. So on the balance of it overall, it's not been the best of period for Mark Warburton. But I still think QPR, now that they've brought Charlie Austin in, as long as they can give him the service, I think they will be all right. But as you've touched upon, brighter say Samuel, I think I've read today actually that Fenerbahce are trying to push to get this deal done now so he can go for the rest of the season. So if it's a case they're going to lose him, that is going to be a major, major blow, because obviously he's such an important player, particularly after they lost the pace and the skill and trickery of Eze back in the summer. So they've kind of lost two of their most biggest attacking threats in a very short space of time. But I think for Mark Warburton, he's an experienced manager. He's been around the block. He knows what he's doing. So I think they will have the ability to keep their heads above water this season. There's no doubt about that. But there's potentially a prospect that they could run it quite close. But I think overall, if they can get Charlie Austin the service and get him back doing what he does best, I think they'll be fine.
I'm not sure. I'm not as convinced as you at all. Although there's a 7-point gap between Rotherham and QPR. I know they've got games in hand, but if QPR are losing against teams in and around them, I know they've won the last two, as you right said before this. It doesn't fill me with a fantastic deal of confidence that they'll be able to pull away. And if the loser, say Samuel as well, that's a blow. They've lost Tom Carroll. He's going to be out for 2 to 3 months as well. That's another one in midfield, a bit of experience that they'll miss. And I just wonder where the creativity is going to come from other than Elias Chair. And it's all right having Austin in the team who's going to stick the ball in the net, but if you're not going to provide any service for him or he's going to struggle to do that, then he's not going to be as influential or as impactful. So I actually worry a little bit for QPR. I do think I still think it's open. I really do. I think Wickham will go down and I think they'll finish bottom. But I think Wednesday, with two games in hand and 6 points adrift, I think I've still got a really good chance. They're in good form. I think Rotherham have got a good form because they can beat the teams around them and the home form's good. Derby and Forest are doing all right. I don't think Birmingham are clear of the woods. Coventry have had a bit of a dip. And I would say up to QPR at the minute. I think Millwall have got enough and they've got a game in hand as well. But anything from Millwall downwards to Wednesday, I think it's competitive and all to play for. And even Wickham, if they got a couple of wins, they've got Wednesday to play, for example. They could even pull themselves back into it. So for me, I think QPR are in big danger, Tom.
Yeah, I think they're definitely at risk of it. But I mean, honestly, and this isn't me just sort of stubbornly sticking to my prediction, I still don't think they'll go down. Obviously, losing Brightside Samuel's a loss because, as you mentioned, service to a striker that can finish like Charlie Austin is absolutely vital. But I just look at QPR's squad and the way that they are capable of playing on their day, and I compare it to the teams around them, and I still think they've got it in them to stay up. But that may just be a case of me stubbornly sticking to my prediction. But if I had to put my neck on the line, I still think QPR will keep their head above water in the Championship this season.
I couldn't really tell you who I think is going to go down other than Wickham, in all honesty. I think it's going to be tight between those teams, and I think, you know, you think, arguably, those teams, Wednesday and Rotherham are the two most informed teams, and yet they're the teams, obviously, that are 5 and 6 points adrift. But they've got games in hand. It's COVID. That's thrown a real spanner in the works of how people are judging this. And I do find it interesting, I have to say. We'll move on now to... Oh, go on, Tom. Not Tom George.
I'm just saying, I'm just thinking, obviously, we say about they've got the games in hand, and I'm always a bit of a glass half empty sort of guy when it comes to games in hand, because You've got to win them games in hand. If you don't win them, they're utterly pointless. And I think when you say that, it's like you're beefing yourself up, thinking, right, we've got this, we're all right, we've got games in hand, we'll soon claw it back. And I think it psychologically can do damage. So you've got to be careful. I think there's a long, long way to go. Personally, I do agree with you. I think Wickham will give it a good go, but I just think they'll fall short. I think the gap's too big now. But as for who else could drop, who knows? But and obviously they got a win in midweek at Huddersfield, Millwall, and they might want to see that as a a catalyst for change, but they got battered by Bristol City in the FA Cup yesterday. So I think they're a team with the form they're in that you've really got to fear for in this slump. Because I think it's something like one league win in 14 games now, something like that. So they've got a lot of work to do. But as you say, very competitive. Could be anybody.
I think so, certainly. And that brings us nicely on to the next game. Two teams further up the table in Middlesbrough and Blackburn. Interesting game, this one. I don't think many would have had Blackburn down to win this one. And my biggest criticism of Blackburn this season has been they've not beaten the teams in the top half and in and around them. They've done all right as flat-track bullies, but they've not beaten teams. They've not had a major scalp or you know, a really impressive win against a top side. And to go to Middlesbrough, who had the best home record in the league not very long ago before back-to-back defeats to Birmingham and now obviously to Blackburn. Wheels starting to come off a little bit for Middlesbrough. I think they're feeling the burn of not bringing in anyone in this current window at the minute, Tom. I think a winger definitely is what they need.
Yeah, definitely. They're crying out for a little bit of flair. Obviously, we know that we've known all season that Middlesbrough are a primarily functional side, and they work hard and they've got that grit and determination, and in many ways they are very much classic Neil Warnock side. I think in many ways the sort of ghost of Tony Pulis is still very much at Middlesbrough in terms of the way they set up. I think they deviated a little bit from it under Woodgate, but it's very much back in full swing now under Neil Warnock. But I mean, I think their performance against Blackburn was probably, it summed up what Middlesbrough do, but it also summed up how it doesn't always work. I thought Borough managed to turn the game into a slog, which they so often do to teams, and it made sure that it wasn't the most pleasing game on the eye. But Blackburn kept probing, and this is the problem with, it's okay to try and drag teams down to the sort of level of football that you want to play and the way you want to play it, but you will come a point against teams with quality where they still manage to unlock you, and they do manage to power you over with their quality. And we saw that. And obviously, on so many instances this season for Blackburn, we've seen that Harvey Elliott's vision and creativity can really unlock teams. And that's exactly what happened for the winning goal in this game. And no matter how much Middlesbrough turn games into a slog, and they can go up against sides that play good football and sort of drag the quality of their football down, as much as they are good at doing that, sometimes it is really difficult to stifle top players. And they've seen that when they've come up against good sides, that you can't always drag them right down to the level of football that you want to play. And although they did for spells against Blackburn, quality more often than not will shine through. And it certainly did in this instance.
Do you not think that's a little bit harsh on Middlesbrough? They're doing well. It's not.
Well, it's probably how I phrased that, actually. I did sort of clock myself while I was
saying that. They are seventh in the table.
When I say drag down to the level, and this is going to sound ridiculous, dragging sideways to a different style of play. Do you know what I mean? Middlesbrough turn games into a slog. They turn them into physical.
I just thought I'd give you an opportunity to
I appreciate that. It was in my head while I was saying it, and it's certainly not a soundbite will be released on Twitter. But I think you got the gist of what I meant in terms of Middlesbrough play football in a very certain way, and when they come up against sides that don't play in the same style and in the same manner, Middlesbrough will make those teams match their style. They will play the games of football how they want those games of football to be played. It's very much the cards are in sort of, what's the phrase? Cards in their hand? No, that doesn't sound right. No,
that's not words.
No, why have cards come into this? I don't really know. It's too late on a Sunday night.
I can talk about cards. I can transition quite well into this.
Should
Blackburn have had a red one?
Smooth, very smooth. I'm a big fan of that.
And Jared Branthwaite, heavily criticised by Neil Warnock, said he should be ashamed of himself. I have seen the pictures. We've seen the pictures of Dale Fry, and it's not a nice one. But young lad going for the ball, I think Warnock's overstepped the mark a little bit with this one. But it should have been a red card and a penalty, no doubt, Tom.
I mean, yeah, first and foremost, it's a red card. I mean, it's the incident that overshadowed the game, and it's a penalty and a red card because it's incredibly dangerous. But the other side of this is, he didn't mean to at all. Like, no way has Jared Branthwaite thought, you know what, I'm a young lad, I've signed on loan from Everton, I'm going to really stamp my authority on the Championship by taking someone's eyeball out. That's clearly not what Branthwaite's intention was. Like, and anyone who thinks that, it's just ridiculous. And this is where Neil Warnock, and I know you two are relative fans of Neil Warnock, and this is where he does get my back up sometimes, because And this is what makes me laugh and what I don't really understand. In his post-match interview, he's going, oh, well, the lad didn't mean it. He clearly didn't mean it. Yet at the full-time whistle, Neil Warnock goes absolutely charging at an 18-year-old lad who, to be honest, like, unless Jared Branthwaite, and I've never met the guy, unless he is an absolute goon, he won't have meant it. Like, unless he is a nasty piece of work, which I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he's not, he clearly didn't mean it. So why is Neil Warnock charging at an 18-year-old and trying to get in his face through a crowd of players? It makes no sense to me. I don't think it shows any class. And I think Neil Warnock, and it's things he's done before in his career, let's be honest. And I think, as much as Neil Warnock gets a lot of fanfare and attention with the way he speaks and the way he presents himself a lot of the time, and yeah, he says some very funny things about football and Brexit or whatever, but it does frustrate me sometimes the way he acts, and people sort of excuse it because it's Neil Warnock and he's a bit funny. But sometimes, and I appreciate that Neil Warnock's had a very successful career in management, I think he sometimes needs to really think about the way he conducts himself. And I was just very, very disappointed to see how he approached Jared Branthwaite after the full-time whistle. I thought it was bang out of order. Can you tell?
I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of you, not only clarifying the fact that you've never met Jared Branthwaite, because we were all sat there wondering if you had, but then to say, unless he's a massive goon, that's elegantly put.
That was super.
We're very professional on this podcast. It's expertly researched championship analysis phrased well, and that's what it is. Yeah. And that I think I'm a big example of that.
Yeah, fantastic. But you're absolutely right in terms of, I think it's clear that Neil Warnock has took his frustration out that they didn't get a penalty on Jared Branthwaite, because by the fact he's going to pull
U-turn,
out
on the referee.
I don't know.
The frustration should have been taken out on the referee.
I'm just pointing out that he did it.
Give me the answer.
He's already had a pop at that referee before, probably wanted to try out someone different.
I was just about to say, there's one thing we can't accuse Neil Warnock of, and that's not being willing to have a pop at the referee. Like, it's not as if he's going to cower away from the referee, is it? He will go full blood for him. But I think clearly he took his frustration out on Branthwaite rather than the referee because they didn't get the penalty. It wasn't a good challenge, but it was badly timed and a bit reckless rather than malicious, I think it's fair to say, George. But for Middlesbrough, obviously seventh in the table now. They've not been on a great run of results. But they're still only 3 points off the playoffs. You just think if they could strengthen a little bit in January, then with maybe a winger, then they could really bridge that gap. Because Warnock is the master of getting more out of a group of players than what is potentially there.
Oh, without a doubt. There's nobody better at doing that in this league, I don't think, in terms of a manager. But you say about, obviously, them only literally have slid down to seventh with this little bad patch that they've experienced. And that shows just how well they've been doing prior to that. They've certainly, for me, and I don't want to be too negative towards Middlesbrough, and I think a lot of Middlesbrough fans would agree, they've definitely punched above their weight this season, without a doubt, in what they've achieved so far. And I still think they're very much in the mix to finish in the top six come the end of the season. Obviously, they've had a little bit of a blip. They've lost three of the last four in all competitions. Including the FA Cup defeat at Brentford. So they've had a little bit of a slog. But at the end of the day, every team, whoever you are, what you're fighting for in this division, you're going to experience a bad patch. It happens. We're seeing it with Bournemouth at the minute. They're having a little bit of a dismal run at the moment, but everybody will expect them to be up there come the end of the season. It happens. But I think for Neil Warnock, he's the perfect man to continue what Middlesbrough are doing. They'll dust themselves down after this today. Had the penalty been given, it could have been a very, very different outcome. You don't know. In football, hindsight is a wonderful thing. But I think, being honest, I think Neil Warnock, what he's doing this season is a terrific job. Disappointing result today, but there's nothing for Middlesbrough fans to be worried about at all. But like you say, one or two reinforcements before the window closes, and that should give them the perfect lift that they need. But overall, doing a superb job.
Yeah, absolutely. They are punching. The fact they're punching so much makes me think that if they just gave him a little bit more resources, what he could do with it. Because we know, say, if for value for money, he does the job. I don't think we're going to bother with Preston, nil, Reading, nil. There wasn't a great deal in the game. We don't do nil-nil draws on this podcast, really, do we? Unless there's a real significance.
We could always mention the fact that Lucas Joao is actually human and he does miss
on
the spot.
Yeah, he's been fantastic this season, yeah, absolutely. But not a great deal of talking points from Deepdale, so... With that, and a further ado, we've only four games to really get our teeth into. That rounds off this week's episode of the Championship Chat podcast. If, as always, if you do enjoy the pod, please make sure to subscribe and share across social media. Yeah, we should do our Shocks and Bankers, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should. I mean, just for the benefit of the listeners, I flagged this to Elliot by just waving my hands about, because Shocks and Bankers, I didn't think I'd be able to mouth to him. But again, I saved the day, so please carry on now.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
Yeah, so let's do that instead. Right, George, what have you gone for next weekend?
Well, looking ahead to the weekend fixtures, once again, as we say, every single weekend, there's a few that could go either way. But in terms of a shock this weekend, I think, based on league position, I'm gonna go for a punt, and I'm going to back Sheffield Wednesday to beat Preston. They've won the last three games at home. They're finding a little bit of momentum again. Obviously, still without a permanent manager at the moment, but I fancy Wednesday to get the better of Preston at the weekend. Excuse me, in terms of a banker, I'm going to with Brentford to win at home to Wickham. I think that game's only going to go in one direction, really. To be honest, I can't see that going any other way. I know, obviously, Brentford have been dumped out of the FA Cup today by Leicester City, but completely different golfing class come the weekend. And obviously, they've got such a brilliant league record going at the moment, 16 unbeaten, and I'm backing them to make it 17. So Brentford as the banker this weekend, Sheffield Wednesday for the shock.
I might copy you, you know, I think. I think I am. I think I am going to copy you, because I quite like the logic behind those, and looking at the fixtures, I think that works in my mind as well. So I think I'm going to go for the exact same. I'll have what you're having. I'm going to go for Brentford as my banker and Wednesday as my shock. Wednesday at home, they're doing really well at the minute under Neil Thompson. They've had a resurgence. Preston, not particularly scary opposition to come up against. It's the sort of team that if you're trying to get out of the relegation zone, you should be targeting 3 points against them. I think there'll be a golfing class between Brentford and Wickham. You couldn't really expect that Wickham are going to break Brentford's unbeaten run in the league. So I'm going to just copy you, basically, because I think for once you're talking quite a lot of sense. Tom, what have you gone for?
So for my banker to start with, I've gone for Brentford to beat Wickham. Obviously, it's just very, very self-explanatory in this case. It's just a really strong Brentford side at home up against a struggling Wickham side, a side that has struggled to adapt to the Championship, really, and make much of a mark. So I think that choice speaks for itself, really. And for my shock, I've got, for the second week running, I'm going to go for Rotherham. Obviously, I backed them last week against Stoke when we did the midweek games, and they put in a really good performance against Stoke. I know they didn't get the win. They ended up getting a 3-0 draw, but I thought they were really impressive. I thought Matt Crooks and Michael Smith in particular were really impressive, and they caused Stoke a lot of problems, and I think they've got potential to cause Swansea problems as well. And obviously Swansea are in good form, so it would definitely be a shock for Rotherham to get one over on them. But that's what the nature of a shock should be, and I think sometimes I'm probably a little bit too conservative almost on my shocks when I just go for a draw that is sort of half likely anyway. But I think this would be a genuine shock for Rotherham to beat Swansea, so I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, it would. Swansea have been really impressive every time I've watched them. They're just getting more and more impressive for me, and beating Nottingham Forest again. I know it's FA Cup and it changes the whole dynamic of it, but a 5-1 victory against Forest at the weekend in the FA Cup is just further underlines how well they are doing at the minute. And obviously Conor Hourihan through the door as well. So those are our shocks and bankers for the weekend action. Please make sure you get involved and send yours in at Champ Chat Pod across Twitter and Instagram. And if you do enjoy the pod, please make sure to subscribe and share across all the usual platforms on social media to help us try and reach as many new listeners as possible. Thank you for listening. Have a great week, and we'll catch you again next time.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views, and debate from England's second tier.